امام اللجان الشعبيه
واستطاع revolutionaries managed to take complete control of the situation in Sana'a before the other governorates
في بقيه المحافظات
بعد سقوط الفرقه الاولى
after the fall of the first armored division and the escape of Ali Mohsen who is currently in Saudi Arabia all political parties and related groups knew that the situation had changed and that Ansarullah was now considered the most powerful movement in Yemen.
Ansarullah يعد الان هم التيار الاقوى في اليمن. يعني رغم هذه الثوره
everybody was expecting that the fall of Sana'a would be followed by violence similar to what happened in the south, namely plunder, murder, encroachment upon people's property and attacks on banks. By God's grace and thanks to resistance staged by popular forces, however, there were no degrading incidents or material damage. It is common knowledge in Yemen that any party that holds power in Sana'a makes political decisions. We, however, broke this rule and encouraged and directed everyone towards signing a peace agreement and national participation, which includes all political parties.
The situation in the country calmed after the escape of General Ali Mohsen al-Ahmar to Saudi Arabia. At the end of the day, all political parties and relevant groups, including Ansarullah and the Movement of the South, put their signatures to the document of agreement that had been prepared prior to Sana'a's fall and laid emphasis upon peace, reconciliation, and the participation of all groups in running the country. Not everything went as the Yemenis had expected, however. The Saudis, a regime passed down hereditarily and not by virtue of election, remained afraid of an independent popular government near their borders. As the future showed, they targeted the legitimacy and democracy of the Yemenis under the pretext of preserving what they themselves lacked and escalated their interference in Yemen's internal affairs in the form of another proxy war to secure the goals of the United States and international Zionism. They are morbidly afraid of having popular governments in their neighborhood, since such governments run counter to them, usurping more foreign land for oil, power, and enforcing dictatorship.
In the limelight.
The FBI released a newly declassified document late on Saturday, 11th of September, describing connections that the agency examined between the hijackers of 9/11 and the Saudi Arabian government in the years since the September 11, 2001 attacks, although it contained no conclusive evidence about whether the Saudi kingdom played a role in the attacks. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Mark Mazzetti and Michael Schmidt. The piece is titled FBI Releases Newly Declassified Documents Related to September 11th Attacks. The FBI released a newly declassified document late on Saturday, 11th of September, describing connections that the agency examined between the 9/11 hijackers and the Saudi government in the years since the 11th of September 2001 attacks, although it contained no conclusive evidence about whether the Saudi kingdom played a role in the attacks. The 16-page report, which was issued hours after President Joe Biden arrived at the World Trade Center Memorial in Lower Manhattan, is the first document to be released since President Biden last week moved to declassify materials that for years have remained secret. Families of the 9/11 victims have long pushed for a deeper investigation into any possible role the Saudi government had in the 9/11 attacks. President Biden instructed the Justice Department and federal agencies in recent days to release declassified documents over the next 6 months after a group of hundreds of affected people, including survivors of 9/11, emergency medical workers and victims' relatives, told him to skip the memorial event at Ground Zero this year if he did not move to disclose some of those documents. The document, which was heavily redacted, describes an interview conducted in November of 2015 with a Saudi Arabian national, a Saudi man identified only as PII, who was applying for American citizenship. He detailed his work at the country's consulate in Los Angeles, California, and shared anecdotes about his personal interactions with embassy leadership. The document also summarizes his contact with people who investigators said had provided significant logistic support to two of the 9/11 hijackers. Some members of the commission that investigated the 2001 attacks believed that if the Saudi government had any role in the 9/11 plot, it was likely to have involved consular officials. But the document released on Saturday, 11th of September, provided no new conclusive evidence about the Saudi government's role in the 9/11 attacks. Speculation around the possible Saudi role increased over the years because of the U.S. government's refusal to declassify 28 pages of a 2002 congressional inquiry into the 9/11 attacks that specifically addressed possible connections between the Saudi kingdom and the 9/11 terrorist plot. The document was finally released in 2016, and it detailed numerous suspicious meetings between Saudi officials and the 9/11 hijackers, and checks from Saudi royals to operatives in contact with the 9/11 hijackers. It was also an unflattering picture of the kingdom's efforts to thwart American operations against al-Qaeda in the years before the 9/11 attacks. The question of whether any Saudi official played a role in the 9/11 plot has festered for two decades, despite numerous investigations into the attacks. The Saudi government has long denied any involvement. Its embassy in Washington, D.C. issued a statement this week saying any allegation that Saudi Arabia is complicit in the 9/11 attacks is categorically false. In its 2004 final report, the September 11 Commission said it had found no evidence that the Saudi government as an institution or senior Saudi officials individually funded al-Qaeda. But some former commission staff members have pointed out that the careful wording of the report did not rule out the possibility that lower-ranking Saudi officials had indeed helped the 9/11 hijackers. They also said that the commission, operating under extreme time pressure, could not run every lead to the ground.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
Islam ID.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
Muhammad. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, boys and girls, and other life forms. Welcome to today's brand new episode of Youth Station. We're coming to you not live from IRB English Radio, and in the studio with me, I have my brother in faith and humanity and co-host in the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to IRIB English Radio, and you are listening to the Youth Show. And I am your co-host, Sayyid Abdullah Al-Musawi.
At your service. How you doing?
Alhamdulillah.
You good, inshallah?
Can't complain. Always, as long as I'm alive, I'm good.
Do you consider yourself as an honest person?
At times, yes.
At times? What are the times that you don't consider yourself as an honest person?
When I see that my honesty might hurt someone, cause someone
We're allowed to do that?
Well, yes and no.
Define it. Elaborate.
Okay, so for example, it wouldn't be honest. It revolves. We know we have a hadith that says there are three places you're allowed to lie, which means you're not being honest in war and trying to mend relationship with people. And I kind of forgot the third one.
In war?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right, so you can deceive the enemy. You can give them false information and stuff like that.
Okay, makes sense.
And if you're trying to mend the relationship between two people, to between spouses and stuff like that. And there's
like for instance, I go to my mom, I go to my aunt's house, and then my mom is like, "Did your aunt talk about me?" And my aunt so totally talked about my mom. And I can't be like, "Oh yeah, she said this and she said that and she threw all sorts of shade, Ma." I'd be like, "No, she didn't say anything. In fact, I think she misses you."
Yeah, so right. you do the opposite, exactly. So that's just fixing a relationship, mending it, not breaking it. So in these times, your honesty is not required, right?
What's the third one? Saving a life?
I can't remember, to be quite honest. But yeah.
So under these circumstances, so under you're no longer honest.
Yeah, so under circumstances.
But that, perhaps, is honesty in and of itself in some form or way.
Well, I mean, if it's an exemption, if it's not considered lying...
Then you're off the hook. So you are basically an honest person.
Yeah.
I don't want to answer the question about whether or not I'm an honest person. Mostly because I don't like being asked questions. And when I'm asked a question that makes me uncomfortable, even if it's a very casual question...
You don't like being asked, period.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, asking questions gives you anxiety.
Yeah.
Okay,
certain
so you're using that as an excuse not to ask any question.
It's not an excuse. It's my reason.
Uh-huh.
But it was interesting, the point that I made about Islam allowing three instances for us to bend the truth a little or lie to through our teeth. But if we were to categorize honesty in general, and I think in a way it applies to the exceptions Islam has made in regard to honesty as well, I feel that a person needs to be honest with themselves. They need to be honest with others, and they need to be honest regarding about their existence in regard with their creator.
Sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
It's so important for us to be honest with ourselves. If there are any youth out there listening to our show right now, if you're in your teens, early 20s, you might be wondering about the significance of this type of honesty. Right now, you're a little young and you're wide-eyed. You are allowed the luxury of fantasizing. But after a while, life is going to hit you hard and it's going to hit you real. Like, reality is going to just run you over like a bus. And at that point, if you're not honest with yourself, you're going to lose perspective on who you are, on where you're headed, where you are, what your values are, what your priorities are, what defines you as a human being. And I think that's one of the scariest things in the world, isn't it? To lose yourself.
If I'm pretty sure that me, you, all the listeners, that if we put ourselves to the scale, we'll find out most of the times there are so many things that we are not honest with ourselves. And so I know the situation that I'm in currently, I know it's bad for me. I know it's not right. I know it's causing me pain. So if I'm honest with myself, I shouldn't be doing it. But then my pleasures and my desires, they're indicating otherwise. Just go with it. Just enjoy
it.
This is one time.
Yeah. You only live once.
Exactly.
You're still young.
So you're not being honest with yourself. So that's just one. And if we, like, examine ourselves and dissect ourselves, we see that don't know, maybe more than 50% of our of the times we are not even honest with ourselves.
We're totally capping ourselves.
Yeah. So if we are not honest with ourselves, then
that's why we're so dysfunctional.
That's, yeah, that's going to affect our relationship with God because we're not honest with God anymore.
For
we're
sure.
not honest with other people as
Unfold,
well. So.
Yeah. We'll leave that part of the discussion for after the break. We're going to be right back. Don't you go anywhere.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
You're back here on Youth Station with me, Zainab, and my co-host, Sayyid Abdullah. Do you think it's possible to be honest with others if you're not honest with yourself?
You can be.
How?
You can be, because sometimes there are things, unless it's a personal interest of yours, that you're dealing with other person, so the notion of honesty might go out of the door because you're trying to secure your interest. So I ask you a question about something, and then you see, well, if I answer him correctly, that might collide with my interest, so I'm not going to give him an honest answer. So, but sometimes it's just a general question, like, say, did you eat lunch today? Or did you eat for lunch? I'm like, no, I haven't eaten lunch. I'm hoping to eat something like that, right? So just a general question. So I have no reason to give you a lie or not or be dishonest about it. But if it becomes a
Unless
matter of personal
liar,
interest,
which is an actual
then obviously we might see ourselves not as honest as we think that we are.
You know, oh, why not? I think about it. For example, you love shrimp, right? Mm-hmm. And I had shrimp for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you've been craving shrimp for a while. You asked me, what did you have for lunch? And I don't want to tell you because I'm afraid you might get upset. I'm afraid you might crave it. I don't know, you could be a pregnant lady, and if you have weird cravings, then your baby is going to look weird. Or I'm afraid that you'd get upset that I had shrimp without you. Right? So then I might have to lie between my teeth. I'm like, oh, what did I have?
Well, so changing the subject is not lying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so lying is one thing, trying to divert the...
Do you think this is a situation where I could lie, though? I'm minding your feelings. I had shrimp, but I must say chicken, because you like shrimp.
Look, as far as the hadith goes, it's an extremely sensitive about lying, period.
I know, right?
So
exactly.
It's like you say a small lie, and the hadith will wipe you out, will wash you in and out. I don't know, like the hadith I've ever read about lying is just scary, because
for
sometimes,
sure.
You know, I want to be honest with myself here. I do lie sometimes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? And I say to myself, and sometimes I put myself to the scale, and I'm like, dear Jesus Lord.
Why the hell did you just
Why did I have to do that? So it's, you know, so I mean, I can hurt your feelings. I'm like, you say to me, did you eat shrimp? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, oh, but why did you do it? I'm like, I did. I'm sorry. You know, but to lie about
See, this is where it comes. You are a normal person. If you're a person with crippling anxiety, you cannot stand the thought of someone being upset with you, even on the slightest thing. So you try to like navigate your way around the truth that you might feel might hurt them. Constantly stepping on eggshells.
Okay, navigating is one thing, lying is another. Right? So if you want to navigate, if I ask you a question and you don't want to hurt my feelings, and then you just
steer it away,
that's good. That's smart. That's very logical.
Yeah, you know, there's a very interesting story that what you said reminded me of, Sayyid. One day, Amir al-Mumineen Ali alayhi salam was standing in a passageway, like, I don't know, in a market or whatever. And one of his, I don't know, companions or a good person was being chased by not so very good people. I forget. This was the gist of the story. And he bumps into Amir al-Mumineen and he's like, don't tell them you saw me, right? And then he runs off. So this person runs off. Then Amir al-Mumineen moves to the other side of the street. And then his pursuers comes and I'm like, yeah, Ali ibn Abi Talib, did you see so-and-so person? And Imam Ali says that since I've been standing here, no, I haven't. And he didn't lie.
Mm.
His Eminence executed it so smoothly, so swiftly, so tactfully.
Yeah.
He saved a person's life. He didn't have to lie. He navigated it like a boss.
Yeah. So the thing is, sometimes that you get caught off guard.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
A problem.
And you're
That's
not as wise as Emir Muminin,
yeah,
are you?
Yeah. No, hell no.
Exactly.
Not even, I'm not even near the word W of wise.
Exactly.
So it's sometimes if you get caught off guard, the first instant or the first thing that comes out of your mouth is
a lie.
Is a lie.
Mm. And I think God is cool with that.
Yeah. No, he's not cool with it.
No?
No, at all. It requires training, because honesty requires training.
Ah, oh, you're right.
Right?
You're
so you need to practice to be... You know, there's a hadith, there's a story that I heard. The Prophet once, he wanted to leave Mecca at the time he was in Mecca. And I think one of the companions, they come up with an idea that they put the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in a big kind of bag and they carry him out.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. So they came to the companion, so the soldiers, they stopped him outside the gates of Mecca. They said to him, "Who do you have in the bag?"
And it's Abada.
And Abada said, "The Prophet." And they just laughed and said, "Go."
Mm.
Right? And that's why the Prophet said, there would be no one more truthful than Abu Dhar. It's a process. It's a training. Sadly, we've been taught to lie from young age.
Have we?
Yeah,
who
most of
the
times. You know why? It's like the phone rings and my father says, "I'm not here." Or my mom says, "Don't tell them I'm here." You're teaching me lying.
For sure.
Right? And how many of these examples that we live through our life, through practical examples, we learn to lie. We go to school and it continues, and so on and so forth.
You know, this just shows these examples that you mentioned from history and the life of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, that shows, it just shows how sensitive, like you said, this topic of lying is to them.
Yeah, it is.
To the school of thought of the Masumin alayhim as-salam. Perhaps nothing is more valued than being honest, straightforward.
And they do say, though, honesty will cause you pain.
But
I mean, Imam Ali says,
anyway.
"Ma tarakali al-haq min sadiq." The truth has left me no friends, because he was constantly honest. You're this, you're that, right? So he was being direct about it. He didn't lie about it. So people will flee away from you.
Yeah,
sometimes it causes you pain and harm.
That's
the
in
truth.
The case of Amir al-Mu'mineen being surrounded by a bunch of low-life hypocrites.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't say straight to your friend's face that, "Look, I think you stink." And then to the other friend, "Well, I find you annoying." To the other friend, "Well, you talk too much." The other friend, "Well, you're poor."
Each person has things against other people, not sometimes maybe more good than bad, but there will be a negative thing I have about you, or you have about me, right? We conceal that. That we've been told to not talk.
Because it's polite.
Yeah, it's like a symptom. We're not meant to say these things. So if I got to saying, "This person, you're annoying, you this, you that," that's obvious. That's not honesty. Honestly, we're talking about in matters where you've been asked a question, for example.
Good.
Or in a situation where you have to be honest about it. For example, you're a witness and you have to be honest about it. Should you lie to save your skin? So even the ayah in the Quran, he says they will say the truth even if against themselves, their parents, and their kin.
Because it's the honest truth.
We're
talking about honesty toward ourselves, toward others, and in regard with our Creator. It's a very sensitive, very broad, very precise topic. And we could go on and on and on and on about this, especially because the holy scriptures that we have, the Holy Quran, the hadith from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, emphasize on it on countless occasions. That's all the time we have for today's episode, though. So thank you so very much, Sayyidina. Honestly, it was some good discussion. And honestly, I love being with you guys again today. Catch you again on another episode of Youth Station. Until then, peace out.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call Creator, my Alpha and Omega, my protector and my Because of you, in weakness I am braver, my defender and my savior, my giver and my taker, abiding in silence with patience.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, since today is the 7th of Safar and it happens to be the martyrdom anniversary of the Holy Prophet's elder grandson and second infallible successor, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace be upon him, let us reflect on a gem of a saying from him. Generosity is to begin with providing the gift before it is asked from you, and serve food in times of famine, while meanness is the fewness of giving and the speech of obscene language.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Light.
A caiman and a local tour guide in Bolivia's Amazon region have formed an unlikely friendship with Bond going viral on the internet. Although people are warned to stay away from caimans, Alejandro Gil has struck up a friendship with one special reptile named Jesus. Despite the caiman's carnivorous nature, it shakes his tail and allows Gil to pat it on the head after being fed. At 4 meters long, Gil, however, admits that getting close to Jesus does still make him nervous.
My knees shake when I work with Jesus. I'm always scared and very careful, and also respectful to tourists. Guides in the Pampa de Yacuma and across Bolivia consult with tourists before undertaking an activity. If they agree with it, then we do it. If one person is not in agreement with an activity, then we don't do it.
Gil says they are only able to get in touch with a caiman in a dry season when the river is at low water levels. They lose the reptile in January when the river rises. Caimans inhabit Mexico, Central and Northern South America, from marshes and swamps to mangrove rivers and lakes. Their diet consists of a great deal of fish, but caimans also hunt insects, birds and small mammals and reptiles. A new initiative has been launched to turn the spotlight on the misery of Syrian refugee children. Little Amal, a giant puppet depicting a young Syrian refugee child, has arrived in St. Peter's Square in Vatican City. This 3.5 meter tall puppet has traveled all the way from Syria to Turkey, Greece, and Italy. It will then go to France, Switzerland, Germany, Belgium, and the UK to focus attention and the urgent needs of young refugees. Syrian refugees, especially children, are in a dire situation after being driven from their homes due to the conflict in their country. Archaeologists have discovered the largest ever bronze mask in an archaeological site in China's southwest Sichuan province.
This is a large bronze mass we unearthed from the central park of the number 3 ritual pit. The widest part, from one tip of ear to the other, is 136 centimeters, and the height is around 75 centimeters. It can be regarded as the largest bronze mask unearthed in Sanjingdui, and even the largest in the Shang and the Shu dynasties.
The mask was found together with other cultural objects, such as ivory and bronzeware. These items needed to be removed first before handling the mask, which made the extraction process complicated. Restoration work is underway on the largest bronze mask taken from the site. The relic is believed to be thousands of years old, dating back to the Shu period. The site is an archaeological treasure mine belonging to the Bronze Age of over 4,000 years ago. The area was first discovered in China in the late 1920s. An Australian zoo has welcomed two baby bilbies, an endangered species. Their birth has brought joy and hope to zookeepers and wildlife enthusiasts. The baby bilbies were born in Taronga Zoo in Western Sydney. Zookeepers named the two male joeys, Molly and Cliff, after a national park that once was home to herds of this animal. The birth of the joeys has raised hope among the zookeepers of reintroducing the species to the wild. Bilbies were once found across 70% of Australia's landmass. They are believed to have inhabited Australia for up to 15 million years.
Chameleons changing color is one of the most fascinating traits amongst living creatures. Now, can't humans make a robot with the same capability? In a science lab in Seoul, a team of engineers have created a robot that mimics the color-changing ability of the famous lizard. The researchers have made the skin with a special ink that changes color based on temperature and is controlled by tiny flexible heaters. The head engineer says creating a wearable device that can actively change color and patterns was the main goal of the study.
The pattern of South Korea's military uniform is made for woodland and certain colors. So if you wear this military uniform and go to the desert, you can be easily exposed. Actively changing colors and patterns to match different surroundings is the key of camouflage technology, and we made this possible.
The total thickness of the flexible, multi-layered artificial skin is thinner than a human hair. The scientists envision that their research can be adapted for military uniforms to help soldiers blend into their surroundings. It can also be used for aesthetic purposes such as fashion, exterior of cars and buildings, as well as future display technology.
Visitors and staff of a French zoo have been amazed by the surprise birth of two African lion cubs. The babies, a boy and a girl, were born 2 weeks ago in Amnéville Zoo. Their birth was unexpected due to their father's advanced age of 17. The cubs will live under constant surveillance for a couple of months so that their health is reassured. According to zookeepers, they are currently in good health. The Amnéville Zoo has asked people on social media to name the newborns. The German capital Berlin turns colorful as the annual mural festival has brought artists together to display their works around the city. Artists have instilled new life into neighborhoods with giant murals that attracted hundreds of visitors. This year's event was resumed under the motto Home Street Home after its 2020 edition was canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Organizers say the paintings invite people to discover the city as a gigantic open-air gallery.
Italian city of Venice has held its annual historical regatta festival, attracting hundreds of spectators. People wearing costumes rowed their colorful boats and gondolas through the city's Grand Canal. The participants reenacted the city's history by carrying people dressed up as the King of Venice and his wife up the canal. Some of the riders also put their strength to the test by racing each other throughout the day. The regatta dates back to the 13th century and has been held every year in September.
The Light is a short bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
An extraordinary concert has entertained hundreds of people in the German city of Dresden. Musicians performed underwater while five steamboats accompanied them with their whistles. The City Symphony Orchestra organized the event in an attempt to boost up people exhausted by the COVID-19 pandemic. Residents welcomed the program, describing it as a glimmer of hope. They believe that the unusual concert was good for heart and soul.
Young generations are becoming more concerned about our planet and seem determined to contribute to make it environmentally friendly. A great example is this Parisian boy who spends a lot of time fishing metals out of rivers and canals in the French capital. Good for him. 11-year-old Raphael uses magnets and grappling irons to fish metal objects out of the Seine River in Paris. Over the past 2 years, he has taken hundreds of bikes, scooters and shopping trolleys out of the water. The boy says the practice was initially a hobby for him, but it eventually turned into a reasonability and a method to raise awareness about climate and environmental issues.
My goal is to raise awareness so that a maximum of people do something. They don't have to do what I do, but at least do something. Even if it's not necessarily cleaning up cannons, it could just be picking up a cigarette butt.
Raphael has also fished some very rare items out of different canals, including handguns, pieces of jewelry, and an artillery shell. An exhibition is therefore being held in Paris where Raphael's findings are going to be put on display. The young environmentalist has also been awarded the Medal of Paris, a prize belonging to the residents who accomplish a deed concerning the city. Brazilian researchers have discovered a substance that could be used as a drug against COVID-19, and you may not like where they found it. A group of scientists have come across a potentially life-saving molecule in the venom of a kind of Brazilian pit viper. It is a peptide or a chain of amino acids that limited reproduction of the coronavirus in monkey cells by 75%. The peptide can be synthesized in the laboratory, so there is no need to capture more vipers. Now the researchers will evaluate whether the molecule can be used to create medicine for treating people with COVID-19. Thousands of cows have descended from their summer quarters in the Swiss Alps to enjoy the warm temperatures of lower heights. The cattle herds spent 7 weeks in the Alpine mountains, grazing at an altitude of nearly 2,000 meters. Their journey down started before sunrise and took almost 5 hours to complete. The cows, which couldn't make the trek due to injury, had already been carried down using trucks and helicopters. Farming has found an alternative look in the Netherlands, where cows produce milk on an eco-friendly floating farm. That may seem a surreal image of Rotterdam, the largest port in Europe. A herd of cows peacefully feed on board of what is known as the world's first floating farm. They live on the top floor of the three-story farm, while their milk is turned into dairy products on the other two floors. The floating farm opened in 2019. The owners say it aims to show the future of breeding and farming.
You must realize that the world is under pressure. Therefore, we have less and less land, agricultural land. Our idea is that in this way, we can actually create agricultural land close to the city and also adaptable to the climate.
The floating farm is seen as a good alternative for normal farming in the Netherlands. That's a country with scarce land while being threatened by climate change. The farm's owners have also applied eco-friendly methods to make it durable and self-sufficient as much as possible. The methods include using solar panels and feeding the cows with grass from sports fields.
An Australian cyclist has become the first woman in history to pull off a front flip on a mountain bike. Caroline Buchanan landed the front flip at the OD9 cycling event in the German city of Birkenfeld. The maneuver won the former two-time Olympian the women's best trick title in the event. This was the first time the Nines featured a female category. The annual event gathers the world's best slopestyle and freeride mountain cyclists to Germany. A spectacular light show has mesmerized people in a Greek capital, Athens. 200 colorful drones performed a short harmonized display illuminating the night sky. Their colors and shapes were changing alongside music tracks. The show, organized by the Athens Cultural Center, took place 120 meters above the National Opera and Library. An Afghan woman has received the gift of life at a most unlikely time while flying. 26-year-old Saman Nouri was on a plane bound for Birmingham when she started having contractions. She gave birth to a little girl in an altitude of 10,000 meters with the help of the cabin crew. Born in Kuwaiti airspace, the baby is named Hawa, which means Eve or Air in Dari. Both mother and daughter are completely healthy. The aircraft was carrying Afghan citizens evacuated from Kabul. The passengers left behind their old lives, but were gifted with a new one in the process. After all, life does find a way. One of Mexico's largest zoos has launched a one-of-a-kind exhibition, with the star of the show being a manatee couple. Visitors will be able to see the couple at the new exhibition, which is part of the largest aquarium in the country. The zoo received the manatee couple from the Caribbean with the intention of raising awareness for the protection of the species. Part of the ticket proceeds will go toward conservation efforts. Manatees are fully aquatic, mostly herbivorous marine mammals that are sometimes known as sea cows. These funny-looking creatures are endangered because of pollution and fishing techniques.
Children saying is the light of guidance and the ship of salvation.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special. Every day for 15 minutes.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful.
dear Muslims all around the world, Salamun Alaikum, and welcome to today's special from IRIB English Radio. This is a special program for the commemoration of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba's martyrdom. So please accept our condolences on this day. Today, Tuesday, is the 7th of the month of Safar, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 23rd of Shahrivar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 14th of September, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. On behalf of my crew in this program, we offer our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, Shia second Imam. Peace be upon him.
أنا المسموم يا زهراء فقومي وافتحي القبر أنا المحمول والأقوى ترميني إلى ضلعيك يا أمه
Muawiyah's plot to poison Imam Hassan alayhi salam. It was Muawiyah's ardent desire to impose his son Yazid upon the Muslims by making him the succeeding Khalifa, despite the fact that Yazid was the playboy of the time with many evil habits. But the peace agreement would not permit Muawiyah to appoint Yazid as his successor. According to the argument, Imam Hassan would immediately become caliph upon Muawiyah's death. Therefore, it was obvious to Muawiyah that if Al-Hassan did not outlive him, Muawiyah could do as he pleased. Thus, Muawiyah planned to kill Imam Al-Hassan in order to pave the way for his son Yazid to be his successor. Muawiyah sent one of his agents to contact Imam Al-Hassan's wife, Jodah. Jodah was asked a small favor, that is to put a little poison in Al-Hassan's food. And in return, Muawiyah would give her a large sum of money and also make her wife of his son, Yazid. A few days later, she mixed poison in honey and gave it to the imam. As soon as the imam took the poison, he became seriously ill. Sensing that his death was imminent, the imam designated his brother Al-Hussein to be the third imam. Today's special, IRIB English Radio, expresses its condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Shia's second Imam, Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba, alayhi salam.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bin asta'in. In this episode, we are going to be concerned with some of the merits of the second infallible Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam. On the authority of the fourth infallible Imam Ali ibn al-Husayn al-Sajjad alayhi salam, the second infallible Imam Hassan ibn Ali, who was in fact a paternal uncle of Imam al-Sajjad alayhi salam, was very pious and the most pious of all people in his lifetime. At the same time, we find that it's indicated Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam performed the Hajj on foot. Please consider the distance or the long, long distance between Mecca and Medina. And Imam al-Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam performed Hajj several times on foot, I mean traveling from Medina to Mecca on foot. And this journey means that he intended to show his utmost respect for the house of God, for Baytullah al-Haram in Mecca. At the same time, we find that he was very pious, so pious that whenever he remembered the day of resurrection, death, and the Sirat bridge, which are going to take place, to happen in the world hereafter, he used to shed tears for this. And whenever Imam al-Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam intended to perform Salat, he became quite restless because he knew well that he was standing in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Whenever he recited the Holy Quran and reached this phrase, Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O those people who have faith, he would say, Labbaik Allahumma labbaik, meaning, O Allah, I've answered to your call. At the same time, we find that Imam al-Hassan al-Mushtaba al-Hassan was the most generous of all people in his lifetime, so that nobody went to him requesting some assistance, some money, or any other kind of assistance, unless he was satisfied. Because of this, Imam al-Hassan al-Mushtaba alayhi salam came to be regarded and referred to as Karim al-Taha, the generous person of the household of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam.
The sublime character of Imam al-Hassan, controlling anger. A man from Syria saw Imam Hassan riding a horse and started insulting him. Imam Hassan did not reply to the man. When the Syrian stopped, Imam Hassan proceeded towards him and after cheerfully greeting him said, Old man, I believe you are a stranger. Maybe you have confused me with another person. If you ask forgiveness, it is granted to you. If you ask for a means of transportation, we shall provide it for you. If you are hungry, we shall feed you. If you are in need of clothes, we shall clothe you. If you are deprived, we shall grant you. When the man heard the words of Al-Hassan, he cried and said, I testify that you are Allah's heir on his earth. Allah surely knows to whom he assigns his message. You and your father were the most resented of Allah's creature to me, but now you are the most beloved of Allah's creatures to me. The man then directed his caravan and became their guest of the town until he departed while believing in their love.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala ali Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid wa barik ala Muhammadin wa ala ali Muhammad kama barakta ala Ibrahim وعلى آل إبراهيم إنك حميد مجيد.
Imam Hassan al-Mujtaba's words of wisdom. Imam Hassan alayhi salam said, O people, he who advises for Allah's sake and betakes his sayings as guidance will surely be led to the most upright way. and Allah will grant him success to the right guidance and will direct him to the best. The disciple of Allah is certainly secured and preserved, while his enemy is surely fearful and disappointed. Be cautious of Allah by very much mention of him, fear him by means of God-fearing, and approach to him through obedience to him, for he is surely near and replying. Answer Allah and believe in him, because it is improper for anyone who acknowledges Allah's greatness to behave arrogantly. The sublimity of those who acknowledge Allah's greatness is certainly their modesty. The dignity of those who acknowledge Allah's majesty is their submission to him, and the safety of those who acknowledge Allah's power is to acquiesce to him and to avoid denying after acknowledgement and deviating after guidance.
Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, he was not only very pious, but also he was very humble. At the same time, we find that Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam wanted to help other people. He collaborated with others on helping them. It comes true that once some people, some bystanders, usually beggars, or for example, people from low class of society, came to invite Imam al-Hassan alayhi salam, with just a piece of bread. And Imam al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam answered the call and satisfied the wish. Now we find that the second infallible Imam, al-Hassan al-Mujtaba alayhi salam, who was very pious, came to be, unfortunately, he has been, misportrayed in certain works. The reason is simply that he, first of all, he was an infallible Imam, and he was amongst the staunch supporters of his father, Imam Ali alayhi salam. And because of this, we find that both Umayyad and Abbasid rulers tried to mar his figure and his personality in the text that certain people wrote at the instances of the Umayyad, Marwanid, and most probably Abbasid rulers. Thank you very much.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.